Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
And we're back for another episode of the Startup Hustle. This is your host today, Matt Watson. Excited to be joined today by Jason Rogers, who's the CEO of Enveri. We're going to talk today about his startup journey, what his company does in the security space, and a lot more. Before we get started, I do want to remind everybody that today's episode of Startup Hustle is powered by Fullscale.io. Hiring software developers is difficult. Fullscale can help you build a software team quickly and affordably and has the platform to help you manage that team. Visit Fullscale.io to learn more. Well, Jason, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks, Matt. Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
So I think I saw in the notes here, you're from Lawrence, Kansas, home of the Rock Chalk Jayhawk, KU basketball, world famous KU basketball. And I've been there a few times. So you're just like, I don't know, 45 minutes from where I live. So it's always good to have people on the show from Kansas. So welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here. Yeah, we're actually working from the KU Innovation Park, which is here on West Campus.
Okay.
So it's great to be sort of at the university as well and have that energy around you.
Yeah, I bet. So I guess to start out, you know, you're the CEO of Enveri, but you're technical, right? You're a software engineer, right?
That's right. Yep. I came out of school with a CS degree. Did a lot of work at Cerner and Perceptive Software in my early career.
Okay.
Across the spectrum of languages. Found my way to a company in Lawrence that got acquired by Motorola and got a chance to do lots of things. And that's sort of where product, sales, marketing, the rest of it sort of started to come into my life and to get some experience on all those things. And then kind of continued on and led large technical organizations, but also managed a lot of the business aspects in an IoT solution that we created for Lowe's, and then again at Matterport before I did Enveri. So yeah, I'm one of those folks that made that transition from pure engineer to management, so to speak.
So as you progressed in your career in engineering, did you work as a director of software development, CTO, VP of engineering, or did you work more on the product side, or where, how did that career path go for you? I'm kind of curious.
For sure. Yeah. I grew up in the engineering ranks. So yeah, I went up through a director of software engineering, CTO of a group that created an IoT solution for Lowe's, as I mentioned, and then a VP of engineering again at Matterport. But again, in those solutions, I was the benefit of sort of being allowed to be a marketer, be a salesperson, all those things. So I got a chance to sort of experience running a business unit on top of being an engineer in those roles. And you've been in those roles before too. You know, they're not just pure technical all the time. You're speaking with customers,
yeah,
et cetera.
So if you're good at those roles, you know, and it depends on the company and their industry and all that sort of stuff as well. So would you say that from your perspective, a lot of developers want to make that transition and go through that. And I think for a lot of developers, we start out and we want to write a lot of code. And it feels like the way we get better at our job is by making the code more complicated. We think we're architecting more and more beautifully complicated things. But at some point in time, the light bulb goes off and that kind of changes, right? You know, you're like, you know what? The code doesn't even matter as much anymore. I'm more focused on like building a product and the best product possible. And I kind of come to the conclusion that all the code is dispensable and the code doesn't even matter that much anymore. Like, but it I feel like it takes a transition somewhere in your career.
Yeah, it's a blend. You know, it is about outcomes. And I think for me, it was interacting with the customers. I remember the first time I got a thank you note from a customer. I worked at Cerner, and really, you know, that journey and understanding what they're doing and what they're going through, which I think made me a better engineer. And so it's not about showing off to my engineer friends how sophisticated I could be. It was about making sure I achieved those outcomes and those goals, you know, for those customers. And I think there's a blend, though, too. I don't like the sort of binary sort of it's either pure art or it's yeah. just the result, right? There's always a blend, and context matters a lot. But yeah, if you keep your eyes focused on, you know, what are you trying to accomplish? And that's both in the now and in some parts in the future. I think I remember seeing a blog post that you put out not too long ago, which is don't over-engineer for the future, for sure, especially as a startup. And we can get into that. But I do think that, you know, in some of my roles, you know, at the IoT service, we had more IoT events in a day than Twitter does tweets. You have to prepare for that. We had 11 months to build a team in the product. Wow. And so, you know, we can't just say, oh, well, we're only going to have, you know, a few at the start and then we'll ramp up. So it depends on the situation. So, but the best engineers I've ever seen really understand the business and what they're trying to do along with the technical aspects.
Yeah. And that's my point, right? It takes both. It's like, it's not all about just the code. And
yeah.
I think especially now, you know, you have your own company, and I think you also eventually come to appreciate that learning how to sell the product, talking to customers, the go-to-market strategy and all of that is also a lot more important than building the product itself, right? Like you can build a product, but if you have no idea how to sell it or who's going to buy it, it's like solving the go-to-market part of it is also just as hard or harder from my perspective than building the app itself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I remember the first time I tried to sell software, we created a new home networking solution at Motorola and flew over to Europe to sell it to a telecom over there. And I had no idea about those things that you just mentioned, right? And so, you know, the feedback I got from the executives at the telecom was that it's a great technical solution. You need better marketing. And they said it very gently, but I was just telling them sort of what it did as opposed to how it's going to help them. So I think those kinds of journeys sort of help a lot. And yeah, you can bring that understanding. You know, you bring both the tactics and the strategy understanding back into your technical organization or your own code makes it so much better.
Well, so tell us a little more about Enveri and what you're doing there these days.
For sure. Yeah, we are zero trust for operating systems. So we allow our customers to determine the runtime integrity of their operating system. And we detect threats to the operating system that other threat detection solutions MITs can't find. So it turns out malware like rootkits not only hide themselves, but they hide other activity from the rest of the security ecosystem. So if I'm managing a large server fleet at Matterport or one of my other jobs or you know anywhere else, I usually have a CASM solution, a CNAPP, a SIM, one of these security acronyms that just means aggregating a bunch of information from these systems into a single place to make decisions about. But that information is only as good as what the systems are telling you. So if these systems are compromised, they're lying to you, you can't trust anything in your security stack. So we find that malware and we restore confidence on our customers' stack. And we kind of see ourselves as a foundation of security for any organization. The origins for Enveri are also super interesting and kind of speak to how you meet and interact with people over time and how things kind of come to fruition too.
Yeah. So how did it start? I read here in the notes that it came, you know, it's based on some intellectual property that you didn't create, right? Did you license some other intellectual property? Like I'm interested about that part of the story too.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, how it got started is one of our founders, Dr. Perry Alexander here at the University of Kansas, has been doing research in trusted computing for a couple of decades now. And he works with the NSA, DARPA, folks like that in this space. And the NSA had commissioned him to do some research which they turned into intellectual property, which was the foundation of our company. So the NSA has this IP that they came back and said, would you all like to form a company around this? We feel like it's the betterment of society to get that technology out there to the world. And they also have a mission in economic development and encouraging startups. So Dr. Alexandra, who I've known for a long time, his wife has worked for me and several of those companies that I mentioned earlier approached me and asked me if I was interested. And our CTO, Dr. Wes Peck, has also worked for me for a long time, but did his dissertation under Dr. Alexander in this space. So it's a nice sort of synergy of knowing people for a long time, but having that knowledge base in both operational experience of these large platforms with these problems and sort of the research behind it with the backing and the knowledge that comes from folks like the NSA. Super interesting.
So the deal you worked out with them, how does it end up benefiting them? Do they get like a percentage of the company or percentage of revenue, or how do you like license that patent from KU?
Sure. Now, it's actually licensed from the NSA.
From the NSA.
And so they have a tech transfer office like universities usually do, and it works pretty similar. I actually encourage folks, they have a bunch of tech to license. It's super interesting. So we started out with a non-exclusive license. And so it's just a simple fee, essentially. So we just paid them a yearly fee, a fairly small sum. And as we got going, we decided we wanted an exclusive license. And so there's a royalty attached to it now our sales and a fee in exchange for any exit that we might have, a small fee. But they're not really in it to make money on the NSA side. They're in it to really kind of help foster this technology for the betterment of all at the end of the day. So it's a great relationship, I think, because they're not trying to fleece you, I guess you could say. They obviously want benefit from what they've invented, but they're more interested in your success.
So tell me a little more about how Inveri works. So I know you're talking about securing the operating system, but is that done by, you know, how the operating system is installed, or like, tell me a little more about like how it actually works.
Sure. In its simplest form, about secure trusted boot. So when a system comes up, we can validate that the files, the binaries are what they were, what they were supposed to be when they were put on that machine. We do that plus a bunch of extra stuff at runtime. So essentially what we do is we look at the built code for operating systems and we understand the data structures and the interactions of what it should look like when it runs. It's a huge graph of millions of nodes, essentially, of behavior. And then at runtime, we sample all that information, collect another graph of about a million nodes, and we compare them. And so we're able to find alterations to the operating system that essentially the developers of the operating system didn't intend.
Okay.
So a simple example, I might have a rootkit that intercepts a call to list files in a directory. And I might decide, hey, I want that to go to my function first. And I'm not going to tell you about five files in the directory. But we'll pick up the fact that now that call is going someplace else. The structure of that call has changed. The size of it's changed. Lots of interactions like that. But it's about understanding behavior. And another way we usually talk about it is the night sky is huge and complex, but it has invariants. Right. So I know what the Big Dipper looks like. I know where it should be. And if I look up at the night sky and it's not there or looks different, I know something's gone horribly wrong. It's the same principle. These software at runtime has a complex set of relationships to data, functions, things.
Mm-hmm.
But if you understand them, you can determine that its behavior is outside of the norm and something bad is happening, which allows you to sort of track the threat at that point.
So for your guys' business, who is your target customer that you're trying to sell to?
So out of the gate, we're selling to large technology SaaS companies. They have a large amount of servers. They have aggregated data. They're a constant attack vector for attackers because of that data.
Okay.
So that's one. We get a lot of interest from universities, health systems. And you can imagine why as well. They have very important information, and they're also under attack a lot. We spoke at a conference with the FBI a couple months ago, and the FBI was talking about the nature and prevalence of these threats and showed a map. They're everywhere, and people would assume that, you know, some sort of complex attack maybe only hits certain people, but it hits everybody, whether it's a state actor or organized crime group or an individual. They're using these tools and they're everywhere. So while that's our target market, you know, working within the federal government market as well, we want to make sure this gets out to anybody who needs it at the end of the day.
So for your guys' solution, does it work with somebody that's using AWS and Azure and stuff like that? Or how does that impact with what you're doing?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it works on both physical and virtual environments. So Amazon, Google, Azure, Linux focused right now. So Debian, Ubuntu, AWS Linux, Red Hat, CentOS. We're adding new distributions every day. All the most recent kernel versions and releases of those distributions.
Okay.
And we're automating that. So every night we're picking up new distributions, new kernels, and making sure that, they work. And for our customers, when they use a solution, it just works. They just have to run our agent and they get an immediate result, essentially. So there's no warming time.
So is your software deployed as a monitoring agent?
It is, yes.
Okay. Okay, cool. Well, so my last, I don't know if you know this, but the last company I started did server monitoring. So I'm very familiar with a lot of server monitoring kind of stuff, but
for sure.
You know, so do you see a opportunity to eventually partner with, you know, one of the cloud companies to make this like sort of another sort of virus scanning, you know, security sort of component that, goes into the base of what they do?
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, there's a spectrum of those too. So we'll take, you know, your company before or somebody like Datadog, who offer, you know, maybe solutions at the higher level. What operating systems are you running? Sort of inventory along with the nature of the SIM that they have. An integration with them, partnership with them makes a lot of sense because we're augmenting, you know, what they're doing. We're not an XDR system. You know, we're not doing what CrowdStrike and Defender are doing. We're making sure what they're doing is right at the end of the day. So I think that allows for a lot of partnership opportunities for sure.
So how is the sales of this? Is it a very long, complicated enterprise sale, or how is that part of it?
Yeah, so we're super new. First, we're just getting ready to finish a pre-seed round. Released our initial service, which is a free service that folks can try, in Verra.com, called Rise. And then our paid service launches this summer. But you know, early conversations with customers obviously depends on the customer, but you know, if I'm selling into a large enterprise like Home Depot, I think that's a fairly long sales cycle and they have their budgets and their processes and their tools. You know, for certain people in certain states, the sales cycle can be quite small. So for instance, if I'm somebody who's just had a ransomware attack, we just had this conversation the other day with somebody. And so I'm through that. I want to get better. So I would like your software. And B, I'm actually not sure if the attacker's gone. And that's what we specialize in, are your operating systems running with integrity. And that's sort of an immediate right now sale in that sense. So
how else do people solve that problem today of the, like, I don't know if, you know, there's a virus or malware or any kind of issues on my system. How do they do that today? Do they just burn it to the ground and rebuild it? And that's how they hope to solve it? Or what do they do?
So I think it's all over the place. Certainly, if you can, a lot of people will burn it and reconstitute. And in nature, like, you know, in my past jobs, we're running large SaaS platforms. If it was just a instance, it's real easy to nuke it and bring up a new one in the cluster. It would hurt if you had to do that with everything. Well, we could have if we had such a breach, which thankfully we didn't. So there is some of that for sure. You know, there are existing threat detection tools that can tell you something, you know, from their perspective. So companies run that. There's a lot of looking around for suspicious activity, which then becomes time and cost intensive. And then I think last is hope, to be honest with you, until we come around, which is kind of why we're here. Let's remove that sort of assumption and hope, and then let's give you the evidence.
Yeah, I could see a lot of value in that because it's like if somebody breaks into your house, right, and you show up and you're like, are they still here?
Right.
Right? Like, and then you just like live in fear, not knowing, you know,
did they leave a camera
on? Is it not gone? Yeah. What happened? Yeah. It'd be like staying at a hotel, right? And you're trying to figure out, is there hidden cameras in here? Like, how do I know for sure there's no hidden cameras?
And how do I know it has integrity? Yep.
That's a good analogy probably for what you do. It's like, you know, we guarantee there's no hidden cameras in the room.
That's the good. I'm going to write that down. I'm going to borrow that if that's okay.
There you go. That's, That's the nugget from the show today. I do want to take a minute to remind everybody that finding expert software developers doesn't have to be difficult, especially when you visit fullscale.io, where you can build a software team quickly and affordably. You can use the Fullscale platform to find what developers are available today to join your team. Visit fullscale.io to learn more about what Fullscale does. So it'd be interesting to see how this progresses for you. I think sounds like a great problem you're trying to solve. And the hard part about this kind of problem is the big enterprise sales nature of it, right? Like, especially if like you want to go to Amazon and like get this on every server in the world, it's like it may take you years to get them to finally come around to that, right? So, but it sounds like to you, and this is a good lesson for anybody that's listening, if you can sell something that kind of deals with like fear and risk, you know, those are always good kind of points that people will buy based on that, right? They buy based on fear and risk.
I don't think we want to introduce fear. I think you're right. I do think that obviously, like in the example I talked about before, there's fear involved. And I look at it as providing comfort or serving those customers.
Yeah.
Right.
But it's their fear. Like the problem they have, like you talk about, like, you know, back to your earlier comment about, oh, when I'm learning to sell something, I'm talking about its features. But the benefit to them, the benefit to the customers, they have fear. They have fear. That's what they have, right? And you're trying to solve that fear. And that is a great thing to sell against, is speaking to their fears, understanding their fears, and that you can comfort them, right?
Yep.
But ultimately what they have is fear.
Yep, absolutely. And the persona, you know, that we take on is sort of parental. I think some folks in this industry would take it on as sort of like a cop mentality, or you're like a soldier or a protector, which is sometimes overbearing. And, you know, we're there to help them, to serve them, to provide that comfort, remove that fear. But you're right. And, you know, and the comment about like the long sales cycle, you know, in terms of startups, you know, for me, I stay focused on sort of the short term goals and the market that we can sell into quickly walk our financial model. But that doesn't stop me from having those conversations with Amazon and others, because I know they take forever. And I have the benefit of having done that before a few times. And so I understand that process.
That's good.
But I do think that, you know, you need to walk it, you know, as you can. It shouldn't just be a wait and pick it up later and hope you can do it fast then. You definitely need to create those relationships, those touch points, those understandings. And to be honest, you know, I guess we can say, you know, we were in the Google startup program. They gave us a bunch of credits for GCP. We've had a lot of great help from the BD folks at Amazon over time. So they're actually interested in helping you too. And that helps you with, you know, the reverse relationship as you get done. I found that actually more people are interested in helping you than, you know, trying to prevent you from succeeding at the end of the day. So if you take advantage of that, it might help shorten those sales cycles and continue to develop those relationships.
So what does your guys' team look like now? Were you the only founder, or you said you had a co-founder that was a doctor or something?
Yeah. So there's five team members. So myself and Dr. Peck, and then three engineers on the team. Four out of five of us have worked together for over 15 years now. Across those journeys. Bring a lot of experience to the table, which I think is good for us. We're at a stage in our career where, you know, we can operate the business in a way to make it successful. We have a lot of experience, can go really fast, which has been super helpful.
So you mentioned earlier about potentially raising capital and stuff. How has that journey gone so far here in the Midwest, or have you not gotten far enough into it yet?
Yeah, well, I mentioned I won't name names at this point because we're not done, but we're nearly done with our pre-seed round led by a regional investor.
Okay.
You know, I do think that, you know, before this at Matterport went from Series D or so in the 4 years I was there to a SPAC IPO. So I got to see that investment environment and then this investment environment. You know, both in terms of the macroeconomic nature, things are definitely a little different now. Maybe there's a bit more oversight, due diligence that happens, but the interest is still there. We've been fortunate with our partners and being able to, you know, work the system in the point where, you know, a lot of folks are having trouble raising capital. Right now, I think it's easier for maybe early stage funds as well, or companies. But it's been great. And the Midwest, you know, we've talked to investors across the spectrum, you know, West, East Coast, Midwest. I'd say the Midwest ecosystem is super healthy at the moment.
Okay.
A lot of interest, a lot of different VCs out there, very supportive of the missions, of the environment, of the people in these areas. I don't think that, you know, the 5-10 years ago of location matters is that big of a deal anymore, other than the fact that, you know, they're very optimistic about what can happen in Kansas City and Lawrence, Kansas, and places like that.
So were you able to actually find an investor that's based in Kansas City?
Yes.
Awesome. Well, very good. Well, that's awesome. I asked just because, you know, it's always part of the perspective. It's harder to raise money here. So glad that you were able to hopefully find the funds and get the deal closed. Maybe by the time this airs, we'll all know and have heard about it by then. But
yeah, hopefully.
Congrats on that. So do you see yourself staying in Lawrence, or do you guys at some point, and working remote, or how do you see that going forward? Because, I mean, in Lawrence where you're at, there's not a huge amount of talent there, right? Like, that's one of the harder things about where you're at, because you're not even in Kansas City. You're like an hour outside of Kansas City.
Sure. I mean, you would think that, but I actually built my career on being able to build teams here in Lawrence. At Motorola, we had 50 to 60 engineers working for us in town.
Okay.
I built a team of 25 in that 11-month period to build the IoT solution here in Lawrence. Built the team for Matterport here in Lawrence of about 20, 25. So I do think we want to stay in the region and grow our business here and our footprint here. That being said, we all know it's a different world. At Matterport, everything was remote after COVID, and is going to stay that way, I think, there. We're pretty open. Our 15 members is in New Hampshire. So we'll have the bulk of our folks here. We have an office at the KU Innovation Park who sits on our board, and a really great organization that helps local startups here in Lawrence. But we're here a couple of days a week when we need to meet, and then we're at home. And I think that's key for whatever size your organization and whatever your needs are, finding what your employees need, right? Not a mandate to be in one place or have to relocate or move. I think those days are over, right? The talent, the mission alignment matters, and then you figure the rest out and make it so your people can be as effective as possible.
So going back to your journey earlier from being a software engineer to now a CEO. So now as the CEO of the company, do you spend any time writing code?
I do. Not a lot, but with a team of five, it allows me to, which is great. I don't think that'll last much longer, for sure. I always have the mantra of reading a lot of code. So even the last maybe 4 or 5 years, didn't have a lot of time to write code all the other job responsibilities, but always made sure I could read code and see what the teams are doing and be able to interact with them on it. It doesn't do you any good to run a group where you don't understand what's going on. So I always involve myself in the most difficult, most important problems, time sensitive issues. And to do that, you kind of have to stay up to speed. So that's sort of how I roll. I do try to write code when I can. It takes a lot of concentration and time, as you know, which is hard when you're jumping in and out.
Well, so I've had the same struggle for the last 10 years, right? So I've been a startup CEO basically for the last 10 years, but also a struggling software engineer at the same time.
Yeah.
So I guess that's my question for you is, when you do write code, are you trying to prototype new things and build new proof of concepts of different things? Like, what kind of work do you usually find yourself engaging in?
I feel like my role here, as well as, maybe VP of engineering at Matterport, was to fill the gaps if they're needed. You hire people to do those roles. They're hopefully better engineers than you. Your guidance, helps them in what to do and when to do it, and in some cases how. So here I do the same thing. So for instance, we wrote our own rootkit for education and demonstration purposes, and we had to extend that. So I worked on that. We need help on our UI, so I'll jump in and do that. I think it's key maybe to the role to be versatile too. It's like, I'm not just an iOS developer. I can sort of jump into Rust code, to Kotlin code on our platform, whatever it is, I can jump in and help out. But I stay away from sort of the long, more sophisticated problems just because, right, again, I don't have the time to focus, right?
Yeah. Well, and I've always felt that when I'm real deep into a project, I struggle to do any kind of management tasks. I want to stay heads down trying to solve the problem. I'm like a dog on a bone, right? And then everything else gets neglected. Like, you know, I'm not managing the team. I'm not, you know, involved in any kind of planning, even if it's just I'm a CTO, not even a CEO, but just like a manager, an engineering leader. Like if I'm trying to be that involved in something in my career, I always struggled big time with writing the code and then being able to step away from it and still do the management tasks. And I feel like that's a really difficult balance. And is that something you struggled with in your career as well?
Yeah, it is. And I think maybe when you start that journey too, when you start to take on a responsibility where you can't just write code all day, which takes that focus and time and energy. First of all, I think you feel bad. I don't know. Did you feel bad? Like when you first started and you couldn't write as much code, did you feel like an imposter or something? I don't know what the right word is, but you felt like, well, I'm not doing what I used to do. It doesn't feel right to me.
Right.
You have to give yourself that. You have to tell yourself the things you're doing are for the betterment of your team, for the company, for the product, for your customers. And so you're doing the right thing and it's okay that you're not coding all the time. So I went through that for sure. And then also you miss it. I think most engineers do. So you got to find ways to sort of feed that appetite at the same time. And then over time for me, it just, you know, it made sense. I get enough of that when, you know, something arises that needs my help or whatever, I get to jump in. I like being able to go look at everything too. And so, you know, one of the privileges of a CTO or a VP of engineering is, you know, you can kind of be everywhere. And so I understand what's happening on the platform side and on the agent side and on the front end side that maybe an individual developer doesn't get. And so that drives me as well. So even though I'm not writing code, I'm at least getting a chance to understand and learn as well, you know, new technology all the time. So my teams are helping me stay up on it by showing me what they're doing in those places.
Well, I feel like I got to a point, you know, a few years ago where I kept telling myself, it's like the most valuable thing that I can do is to make everybody else more productive. You know, it's not just about my individual contribution, which is always frustrating because I feel like I could do things a lot faster than other people. But what I really need to do is figure out how do I make everybody else more productive, right? And so I think that was the thing I tried to focus on was that. And then, you know, then making that shift to being a CEO, it became more about making the whole company productive, right? And realizing that there was a lot more to do around here than just writing code. Like we got to go sell something and we've got customers to deal with. We got, you know, problems to solve all over the company that are not just product related. Right. And
right.
Learning.
Do you feel like it made you a better CEO? Because you were able to then go back to your development, your engineers, and you know where they're coming from, but now you have this new perspective and you can kind of help them understand what else is going on in the business or no, maybe you didn't pick that up.
I think it was, so I hired a chief operating officer. His name was Craig Farrell and he was amazing. And really it's like Craig and I kind of divided up the overall company, right? Like he oversaw sales and support and I was more involved in engineering and marketing. And, you know, so, you know, I was still more involved in engineering on a day-to-day basis and was the CEO and definitely had the company vision, the product vision and all that. But then I relied on Craig to run kind of the day-to-day of some of the other teams. So I was more involved in the engineering and the marketing. And so I think, you know, every company is different, right? Especially when you're a small startup, it's just trying to figure out where do you provide the most value and what do you have somebody else focus on and having somebody you trust to run it, right? That's the other part of it too.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, it's great. I mean, for us, there's a high trust, I think, environment at Invery, just again, the length of time we've all spent together. But, you know, just in my expanded role as CEO, I feel like going back to them and saying, hey, I just talked to this MSSP, they have these problems. And then we have a conversation about what to do or not to do or how to do it. It makes it so much easier. Because they understand, you know, that outcome. And you can reproduce that in any environment, right? It doesn't have to be a startup. But I feel like if you can bring that experience and that knowledge, that insight back to the team, everybody just wants to help at the end of the day, I think, and serve those customers. So I think,
well, being able to have the product vision and understanding all the engineering, all the technical bits, but then be able to spend a lot of time with the customers, right? Then be able to go back and forth between the engineering team is really valuable. It's like you have people skills.
Yeah.
Back to the old Office Space movie.
I talked to the customers. For sure. And, you know, it also, like, there might be engineers out there and they might feel like, I don't think I can do that, or I don't think I have those skills. And some people just love being in code, and that's great. But I don't like those labels, right? Where, oh, you're an engineer, you can't do that, or you don't have those skills or whatever. You know, put yourself in those environments and learn. You know, be uncomfortable for a while. I think a lot of people can stretch themselves. I, you know, 15 years ago, I never imagined I would be a CEO of a company with what I was doing. But, you know, by putting myself in sort of uncomfortable situation after uncomfortable situation, here I am after a bunch of learning and growing as a person too.
I think it's also important you learn that you don't know what you don't know. And the more you're involved in all these things, you also understand how things are supposed to be done. It's like, even though you're not an expert at everything, like you're not an expert salesperson, you're not an expert at running an operations team or a sales engineering team or all these different things, you worked at different places like Matterport and others where you see how that's supposed to be done. Like, you know what good looks like, right? You're like, even though I'm not an expert at all these things, like I understand how they should work. And, you know, I understand like that we need to do them, and that they need attention. And I appreciate the efforts that other people put into these things, even if I'm not an expert at them. Right. And I think that's part of it too, is just understanding how all the different roles of all the different people work and appreciating what everybody else does. It's like, we do our little part and we're engineers, but there's all these other pieces. And over time, you start to at least understand and appreciate how all the rest of the pieces come together, I think.
Yep, absolutely.
I think for me, for my very first job as an engineer, I was talking to customers every day. And it's like, I was the lead developer and lead support person. I flew all over the country. I installed the software. I was like front and center, you know, with the customers. And I think that really changed the whole dynamic, I think, of my career in some perspective, is it made me get out of my shell, and I traveled all over the United States, like installing our software and doing all this stuff and talking to customers. Like, I got the customer's feedback directly, and then I decided if we were going to do it, and I just built it. And half the time I was doing that stuff while I was flying around on an airplane going between customer installs. So it's like, for me, I think that experience talking to the customers and understanding their problems and being able to architect, you know, solutions to them really is what helped, you know, turn me into more of a product oriented person from just being an, you know, focused on the code and the engineering part of it.
Yeah, that's awesome. It sounds like you were, you know, super fortunate to be in that position. So if you're out there and you're in a position where you're not getting that, find a way, right?
Yeah.
I was asked to go travel Europe and sell, you know, these products. Never been to Europe, right? So you get those experiences, and it might seem, you know, scary, or maybe I can't do it, but go try. You get to learn. And you know, there are always ways, wherever you're at, ways to sort of expand your horizons. And I think that overall makes you a better employee, a better servant to your customers, all those things.
So did you say you started your career at Cerner?
I did, yes.
So I imagine that's probably a lot different, where there you're probably hid in a cubicle all day and never talked to anybody.
You know, so this was a long time ago. I thought Cerner was great. I was there for about 4 years. You know, they had then a reputation, maybe earned, of working people kind of hard. I was probably doing things that maybe a person with that much experience at that age shouldn't have been doing, but gave me a lot of experience. But in that, you know, serious problems that they would have me deal with that would force me, like you, to interact with the customers.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a serious health related issue. You have to fix it, but I also have to understand what's going on from the users. And so, and then plus, you know, at Cerner, it's great because you're impacting people's health. And so there's a lot of value in the mission that they have that you can attach yourself to. And I think gives you the extra incentive to go and make sure that the folks that are using the product are happy or doing what they're that they need to be doing with the software, what problems they have with it, those types of things. So,
well, if you need to hire software engineers, testers, or leaders, FullScale can help. We have the people and the platform to help you build and manage a team of experts. When you visit FullScale.io, all you need to do is answer a few questions, and our platform will match you up. We'll match you up with our developers that are available. At FullScale, we specialize in building long-term teams that work only for you. Learn more when you visit FullScale.io. Thank you so much for doing this today. And as we wrap up the show, I'm curious if you have any other wisdom to share out there with maybe other entrepreneurs or other software developers that want to become entrepreneurs?
Sure. Again, thanks for having me and giving us a chance to talk about Inveri and our products and our upcoming launch. I appreciate that. The best advice I can give is a silly story I tell lots of folks that I'm mentoring. There are lots of people out there that give you lots of opinions. And as an entrepreneur and startup, you go and you pitch and you get feedback about what you should or shouldn't do for your business. And the story I like to tell people is an old man, a young boy, and a horse travel through four towns. And they start off with the young boy riding the horse in the first town. Everybody gets mad because the old man's walking and not the young boy. So they switch. And then the next town, they're mad because the old man's riding and the young boy's walking. So then they both get on the horse. And then the next town, they're mad because they're making the horse tired. So then they both get off the horse. And then the next town, they're made fun of because nobody's using the horse. And so have a mission, have a passion, understand what you're doing, and drive towards that. And just understand that you're going to get all this feedback. You should learn from it, take it in. But if you stay focused on your mission and your passion, you'll find a way to your goal. And usually it's been my experience in doing that.
Awesome. I love it. I love that that story. I've heard that before a couple times. I like that a lot.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Matt. Again, I appreciate it.
Yeah. So everybody, this was Jason Rogers. And again, that's Inveri.com, Inveri.com. And Jason, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Awesome. Thanks, Matt.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time.